Okay, everybody, welcome to the show. Gideon, how is it going this week, my man?
It's going good, dude. Man, I've been watching a lot of Truck Simulator Let's Plays. That's been awesome. Surprisingly awesome.
Truck simulator, you said? Like
They're just
semi
really,
trucks.
yeah, like
Okay.
American Truck Simulator. They've
Okay.
been just crashing into shit, just like wrecking their truck, getting speeding tickets and stuff. That's been really fun. I think I briefly mentioned, but I saw Maxine and Long Legs a couple weeks ago. And
How was Maxine?
Maxine, I gave like a 2.5. It was honestly a big letdown compared to the other ones. Like, it had so much potential in the premise. But it was like not scary. It kind of dragged. The third act was kind of, it's like it devolved into a B movie. Almost like they were trying to pay like homage to it, but it just kind of like tanked kind of the movie for me. And it felt more like a day in the life of Maxine than like Maxine, an 80s horror slasher, if that makes
Yeah,
sense.
and how is Long Legs?
And I fucking love Long Legs. I think it seems pretty divisive for some people. Like, we went with a couple of friends. They gave it a 3.5 out of 5. Me and Alyssa gave it a 4.5 out of 5. I thought it was incredibly well acted, well shot, lots of cool visual styles, never ending sense of dread throughout the entire thing. Interesting plot, and I was not bored at all. I'm like, I was like about ready to fall asleep with Maxine at some points.
So the big question here is, how was Nick Cage?
So even that, I feel like some people probably think he comes off a little goofy, but I love Nick Cage and I loved seeing him do this type of role because it's so cool. He's such an interesting actor to be a fan of, and this is even comparing this to maybe like something like Mandy. You really don't see this kind of Cage like hardly ever, I'd say. And that was awesome. And I really like that. Definitely probably the highest thing of the movie, next to maybe the plot and some like
Okay.
cinematography.
Awesome. And joining us special for this week's podcast is my good friend Xander Newkirk. How's it going, Xander?
That's going pretty good. Yeah, I'm Xander. I'm the guy who's been chuckling and restraining himself from jumping in at all this commentary about Nick Cage. I mean, like, what more can a man do? I've been like
Is
biting my
it,
lip, and I've been holding
yeah.
back. I've been gripping my pillowcase. I've been doing everything I can just to like restrain myself, you know.
So let's get a feel for you as a movie watcher and a fan of Nick Cage. Give me some of your favorite Nick Cage roles.
One of my favorite ones that I saw with my good friend Paul McLeese, who I believe has been on this podcast
He has been
before.
on this podcast yet.
It's I kind of forget the name of it, but it's like I think it's a it's the one where he's an arms dealer. And
Lord of War.
yes, Lord of War, thank you. I knew War was in the name. That was what's important. Lord of War like was a spiritual experience for me because it was one of the first Nick Cage movies that I'd actually watched, and I'd watched it with Paul. And just seeing like the movie's brilliant, and it's there's like a scene where Nicolas Cage is in a limo with his brother, played by Jared Leto, who and his brother is like a cocaine addict, and so Nicolas Cage is sitting there like all aloof, thinking about like guns and ammunition, like African warlords trying to kill him, and he's like pouring out with like this little vial on the leather seat next to him, just this little sniff of coke. And then like Jared Leto, he's like, "Go for it." And his brother Jared Leto like leans down and sniffs the coke. It's just something that you know what I mean? Like if I described that to anybody today with the context of both Jared Leto as a person and who he is, and then Nick Cage, it's just God, that's like a film. It stuck with me forever. So that's one of my all-time favorites. Obviously, I was a big fan of Mandy.
Mandy's
I,
sweet.
you know. Sorry, like I don't have a hot take. Like I was actually kind of like an overrate. I don't have a hot take on that movie. I think
It's sweet.
visually it was stunning. Nick Cage, I believe, unironically, I think he gave a great performance, like a classic Nicolas Cage performance. It was like funny and yet like moving. I don't know if I'd want to watch that movie like on any kind of acid or drugs or shrooms, you know. But
Every
yeah, it's a
nice
bit of me.
drink.
Little Lord of the War. I like the campy Nick Cage, and I also like the. I like the actor Nick Cage. Raising
You know,
Arizona, another classic.
he's a man with range. This last November we did Nick Cage November, and we covered all the bases. So I mean, we covered just as far crazy as he can do with Vampire's Kiss, and then we did Adaptation, and we did Leaving Las Vegas, which he won an Academy Award for. So yeah, we've been all over the map with Nick Cage around these parts. This podcast's official stance on Nick Cage is that he's great.
He is great. I hate to say, I'll admit it here. I don't know if I'm outing myself, but my Nicolas Cage lexiconum is not as vast. The two movies you mentioned, I have not seen. I have not seen Vampire's Kiss or...
I highly recommend all of the ones that I just... So Vampire's Kiss is not a good movie, but it is the most deranged...
It's not a good movie.
It's not a good movie, but it is the most... It's actually pretty bad, but it is the most Nick Cage performance of any of his movies, and he commits to it 1000%. And it kind of encapsulates what I love about him is that, like, even when he's in the biggest piece of shit ever, he commits and he does not wink to the camera. And he's a professional actor, and I greatly admire this about him.
He's like the golden. Oh, I guess silver lining in that movie that just shines so bright. Mm-hmm. And everything else in that movie is bad, really bad.
Yeah.
Like almost offensively, just not well made. But he's just like, some of his most iconic, like, or memeable moments are in that thing.
Uh-huh.
Him reciting the alphabet that lives in my head.
A-B-C-D.
So good.
You'll wake up at like 4 in the morning on a Saturday and be like, just thinking of that scene.
Yeah. Xander, next time we're in the same vicinity, we'll watch Vampire's Kiss, okay? And you'll have a great time, because it's just like, I laughed my ass off that whole movie. I mean, that's where the meme where Nick Cage's eyebrows are like all the way up to here, and he's just
of course,
going toward the camera. Like that's the movie where that comes from. It's totally off. I'll send you some clips after the show. Anyway,
yeah,
let's not get too distracted by Nick Cage. We are here to discuss. I should back up, because Xander was going to be special on the podcast. I suggested that Xander come on and bring one of his all-time favorite movies, which is Tangled. So I wanted to have Xander on to talk about this movie and fill in for Neil. So Xander, why don't you tell us why you chose to bring Tangled to the podcast?
Well, Tangled to me represents like a movie kind of like in a strange way, both in its time and out of its time. It relies on very standard, simple tropes, and you know, it's at its heart, it's a comedic, romantic fairy tale, and yet it kind of comes to grips with, without forcing it in your face, like these really intense, you know, psychological dramas that are going on. You have like abuse and gaslighting. You have kidnapping. You have kind of like self-discovery. You have like insecurity. But there's never a moment where in the film where those things are blatantly shown to you, because I first watched it and I was just like captured by the music and, of course, the horse, Maximus, one of the greatest characters ever portrayed in film. And I don't know. I think there's a lot to talk about this film. That's why I wanted to suggest it. I don't want to just, I could wax poetic about my favorite songs or scenes and stuff, but
we'll get to the songs, dude. The songs in this movie rip.
Yes.
Let's just put it that way. Okay. So before we get more into it, Gideon, what's your history with this movie? Had you seen it before we watched it?
Nope, I've never seen it. I only really know about it from like the meme where all the swords are being pointed at Flynn, and it's like, just this is you with whatever opinion, or you know. And I'm
this is you on Sigma Cinema saying Nick Cage is a bad actor.
I'm a huge animation fan. I definitely like plenty of Disney stuff, and I'm not one to like be like, oh, Disney, whatever, you know, I don't need that kid trash. It's like, there's plenty of enjoyment to be had with this. So I went in blind, didn't watch any trailers or anything. So
that's interesting. I'm actually really curious to hear your opinion then. If I may, Sam, I don't know if you had a list of talking points, but
I don't have a list of talking points, but let me just give my background. I had seen this movie once before. I think we watched it in college in the Searly house.
Yes, we did.
And I will admit, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't like super over the moon about it. And I will say, this time watching it with Grace, I enjoyed it a lot more. And I had a really fun, great time watching it. And to your point, Xander, which I'm glad you brought it up because it's something I definitely want to get into. I think this movie works on this is a fun Disney kids movie. And it also has some like deeper stuff going on. In the background, but it isn't so like lost in the sauce on all that stuff that it gets out of control. It just has, it's nice. It's short. It's clean. It's well executed. It's very funny. There are, I love the horse in this movie. The horse is one of the funniest things ever. Like the way he's animated, like when he takes the wanted poster and he like chews through it like a wood chipper. That shit killed me. There's a lot of funny animation in this. There's great songs. There's just a lot of good stuff. Now, I just want to ask about this. I don't know if either of you guys know. This is before Frozen, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. I'll double check. I believe it is, because I think, yes, it is. Frozen is 2013, Tangled is 2010. So this was kind of the first real Disney princess movie in quite some time.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Like European castles and not dragons, but knights and thieves and magic and a king and a queen. And I think I'm not trying to get into like culture war stuff here, because I think it's great that and Disney has had a lot of success over the last couple of years, things like Moana and things that are like Encanto that are not European stories. Thank you. But certainly Tangled and especially Frozen have shown, I think, Disney executives that, like, as much as they, I don't want to say don't want to admit it, that's not where I'm trying to come from with this, but, like, despite, I think, how a lot of people talk about we need to have, like, more diverse movies, whatever, more diverse backgrounds, not just, like, European fairy tale things, it's almost undeniable from the popularity of Frozen and Tangled that like what people want, or at least what a lot of little girls want, is European knights and fairies and magic and dragons and spells and things like this, right? Like that was like my first thought about the success of Frozen, certainly, but even the success of Tangled, which I think probably led to Frozen being so popular.
Well, I didn't know this was going to be the podcast, Sam, where you came out as a problematic bigot, but I guess I'll just have to signal against you. First off, I thought The Frog and the Princess was stunning. And
that is a great movie. That is a great movie.
I actually do like that film. I was going to actually mention that as one of my, but like putting that into its own context versus Tangled, like I like The Princess and the Frog, right?
Princess and the Frog, yep.
Because like again, they're adopting that like Bayou Cajun, like you know, steep South Louisiana, a vibe with a main African American family as a cast of characters, and it's like I loved it. The film didn't fail because of the DEI diversity inclusion thing. That movie, I shouldn't say fail, it's pretty harsh. It didn't work as well because it did actually try to grapple with some of these larger like themes, in the film. But it didn't. It did it a little too on the nose. There was almost like, in my opinion, kind of a there was something else there. And the songs, I just were not as good, in my opinion, as Tangled too. Like I was really disappointed by that. I was expecting some like soul, folksy, you know, borderline choir.
I think they're kind of. It's. Things. I would describe it as more uneven. Like. I've Got Friends on the Other Side more than I like any song in Tangled.
I love that song too. Yeah.
But there are like 3 or 4 8 out of 10 songs in Tangled. And there's one 10 out of 10 song in Princess and the Frog. That's kind of how I would describe it. So before we get too far down that road, we'll come back to all that stuff. So give me your overall thoughts, Gideon, like in terms of like enjoying kind of your high level, how you felt about this on your first watch, right?
Yeah. First time seeing this, really liked all the characters. I feel like the horse and the chameleon, they could have fallen into that bucket of like annoying animal tropey character that tries to be funny, almost like that weird gremlin motherfucker from the Black Cauldron, remember?
Yes, yeah.
Whatever the hell that guy's name was. And so yeah, I love the characters. I love the like,
Gurgi.
yeah, Gurgi. God,
Oh, God, the
guy.
worst.
Worst
Xander,
character we've
you should have
encountered
been,
on the
dude,
podcast.
Xander, you should have been here for to do the Black Cauldron podcast because you would fucking love that movie.
Also,
But
I've seen
Gurgi,
it a long
oh
time
my
ago.
God, Gurgi is like on the level of Jar Jar Binks in terms of like a character that
Oh,
almost
yeah.
ruins a movie.
I
Anyway.
remember that movie is like, I remember one thing I remember about that film is like it has some of the most metal, it's like in parts it's like coming off like it's a heavy metal like short in terms of
Hell
like
yeah.
the grim fantasy. And then I remember distinctly, even as a kid, there's like, is Gurgi a dog or
He's a
He's like
man.
a rat monkey
He's like
thing.
an abomination. I don't know. He's
I do
some.
remember there was this weird tonal thing where they were doing the classic like 80s like kind of grim dark adventure fantasy that you could do in that time, and then they were just throwing in this strange, I remember there was a strange character, and that's Gurgi. I just didn't remember it very well.
Is the
Yeah, block
worst.
it out, man.
So
Block it out.
on the Disney Wiki, it always like whenever you pull up like the Disney Wiki page for an individual character, it always has a quote about that character. And the one for Gurgi really makes me laugh. It says it's this is Gurgi speaking. It says, "Taryn has many friends. Gurgi has no friends."
That is great, man. Fuck Gurgi. Dude, just
Gurgi's I'm gonna
brutal.
put a picture of him in the chat just to remind you of
Yeah.
what this fucking guy. He looks like he honestly looks like Geppetto from Pinocchio has been turned into a
Yeah.
dog.
Okay. Yeah. I was just looking up a picture of
He
him. I was thinking
looks
the
fucking weird.
exact same
He
thing.
looks ex he looks exactly like Geppetto. He has the same mustache.
Yeah. It's like, what's wrong with the thing is the two this is about to become like a whole Black Cauldron episode, but I remember too, like it didn't see his character, the movie was already kind of goofy and had other like likable funny characters. He felt very unnecessary. You know, it felt like someone dabbed a little bit of like just a, you know, a little bit of a light brush stroke of like, you know, like pink of the fading sunset in a beautiful painting. And then someone came along and said no, and they took a huge bucket of bright pink paint and just threw it on this painting. It's like, I don't know if that was necessary. But in
Yeah, it's a
contrast to
little.
Tangled, as you were talking about, the I think the two, whatever you want to call them, what's the trope, I guess, within Disney? The those comical
Non-animal
relief
characters.
animal characters, yeah.
Yeah.
They both worked really well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I so loved those two characters in particular, but really didn't have any issue with any of the characters, except I thought it was a little strange that Tangle's mom and dad, did they like not speak at all? Like, I don't think they spoke word.
No,
No.
they didn't. This is impressive. I mean, great storytelling there in the beginning with like the fable. I thought they did a great job.
I thought that was really cool, kind of like showing off how she was almost like this magical child with the magic like flower and everything. And I loved seeing her hair glow and everything like that. That was really cool. I loved all the like lush meadows and greenery and scenery and all that stuff. Maybe my favorite thing above everything else is all the physical comedy that's in this movie. It's just
Yes.
everywhere, all over this. I will say one of maybe shocking to you guys, but one of the weaker things, and it's probably just my inexperience with the movie, is the music for me. I can't really, and I just finished it today, so I can't really, like, none of the songs are really like sticking in my mind, or I can't really recall the lyrics and stuff, but I think that's just my not being as familiar with this movie.
I've
As
had
some
Mother Knows Best stuck in my head for 3 days now.
Yeah, I
I've
as
been
someone
like
who's seen the
all
movie
day today,
like
I was
six
like
times.
in my house, like on Zoom calls in the background with my microphone muted, and I was like, "Mother knows best."
Best.
Ba, 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 da, da, da. Dude, and then when they bring it back for the reprise later, and she's like, "Rapunzel knows best," I was like, "Oh!" Like I couldn't believe that they had like turned it around. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That song just I think is
You know, I'll
really,
say
really
the
good.
I had a similar experience, honestly, my first viewing. I was more caught up in the comedy. I'm glad you mentioned the physical comedy because I feel like people are afraid today, or not afraid, they just don't do it, of a good gag, a good visual gag, particularly with animated comedy. It's like we're in a world where you can have characters falling from heights and you could do funny, absurdist things, and that's what makes it like funny. Like the horse just eating the paper. you know, in the way he does, or like him when he pushes aside all the guards when he's going into the tavern with his hooves. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I love that. It's just a good physical gag is great. That's what I remember the most out of my first viewing, and then just like Flynn and Rapunzel's back and forth and that chemistry and that romance. That was the thing I remember the most. But on multiple viewings, I've seen the movie quite a bit now. The music is actually very very charming. None of it goes on too long. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, but I don't think there's one that goes on for like longer than 2 minutes, really. I think maybe the longest song is perhaps when they're in the tavern, and it's like I Had a Dream.
That one's great too.
Mm-hmm.
I laughed out loud when the guy was like, "I collect ceramic unicorns," and he
yeah,
I fucking laughed.
But I love like, or go ahead, Xander. Sorry.
No, I love to like, to me that feels almost like that scene feels like a big centerpiece to the film, and it's always one of my favorites to rewatch because it just shows everything about Rapunzel's character. It kind of illustrates the world too a little bit. It's full of gags, and then I also love Flynn. Flynn has one of my favorite moments when he gets his turn to sing, and he's like just this very cynical. He just wants his island and his money, and everyone mm-hmm. else is trying to be all lovey-dovey. I love that because I feel like in another movie, like Flynn would have been made to sing about, "I really just want to have a girl," like something like that, you know? Because it's like he hadn't finished his arc yet. He was still kind of caught up in this material, like desire for what he wanted. It is hilarious.
I think the characters are stronger than most other like old school Disney movies because they have their own ambitions before they become romantic ambitions.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. Like Rapunzel just wants to get out and like see the lights and like live life or whatever. And then this whole Flynn thing is kind of secondary, and they don't deny it. Like the movie is unapologetically like romantic and they live happily ever after, but I think it's stronger because they're both going out. They seem like real people that have like other yes. things going on aside mm-hmm. from like just being enthralled with this other person.
Absolutely.
Right? And you're right. I love that Flynn is very like thievish, right? Mm-hmm. And like just selfish and wants his island and wants his money. And the guy he idolizes is like some pirate that got a lot of money and
yeah,
like I love the bit where he's like, "And I changed my name to Flynn Rider because mm-hmm. Eugene whatever wasn't a cool name." I'm like, every guy's done this. I mean, not every guy changes yeah. their name, but every guy that moves away tries to start over. You know what I mean?
And it's in a lot of ways it's a classical retelling with an interesting psychological underpinning of like Flynn's superficiality, right? His everything about him is like an adopted mask, you know, about not to get too like fucking Kafka, he's a cop. No. But like he has a fake name. He goes on these adventures. He wants to be something that he's not, which is rich, wealthy, independent, when, you know, he was an orphan and poor. But like the beaming light that is just the personability and the openness of Rapunzel kind of melts that exterior of him away, but again, it does so in a very funny manner. There's never a scene where I don't even think there's really ever a scene where she like chides him per se about like directly and like says it out loud for the audience, you know, "You're really a superficial thieving guy." You know, there's never that scene in the movie. She just kind of like through her actions and his actions, like a good movie does, it's a lot of visual storytelling. You know, where like the horse is a great example. There's so many great scenes. God, we could talk about this movie for like 3 fucking hours. There's a great fucking scene with the horse where like, you know, she like they're at the river. They just escaped for the big action scene, you know, through the canyon and the dam. And, you know, and the horse appears and like starts to go after Flynn. Right. And it's like mm-hmm. immediate like this. It shows Rapunzel's character. One of my favorite moments where she gets the horse to calm down. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and Flynn's like, "What?" You know, like he's like, "He's a bad horse," and she's like, "He's nothing but a big softy." And he like makes the horse sit. It's just mm-hmm. so good. You know, she never looks at Flynn's like, "You should be more trusting with people." You know, that's yeah. not, you know what I mean? There's never
yeah.
there's like never a scene that's like does that. And it's something obviously in the first viewing you don't ever think about, but on later viewings I appreciate it so much more because I like like one thing about this film, films that I like to rewatch have a consistent theme where this is going to sound like obvious and kind of like dumb. But they have lots of scenes that I enjoy. There are movies that I like, but I can't like watch like once every couple months. I have to like wait a while, yeah. You know, per se, because they're either very intense or they drag and it's like this emotional roller coaster. But I mean, there's not a moment entangled with a scene that I find, oh, this is boring. This is okay. Let's get to the next part here. It's mm-hmm. all very, the action's always moving. Something's always happening. The scenes that are kind of doing little things. I know we're kind of getting into the structure of the film now a little bit, but like if there's a scene with the evil mother, it's like short, right? Mm-hmm. There was never like a 4 minute
they never
conversation.
Beat you over the head with things. I think they do a good job of like, like we've said before, they like present things to you, but they like respect you as a viewer and as an audience. And it's like a good natured movie and it's funny and it's just sharp and it's just very well made and it's not grating at any point. Yeah. Let's talk about the villain in this movie.
Mm.
What's her name?
Mother Gothel.
Mother Gothel. Okay.
Played by the famous Donna Murphy.
I see. What else is Donna Murphy in?
I actually don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
Also, did you know?
That sounds like you had the Wikipedia page up.
Did you know that Jeffrey Tambor was in this movie?
Mm-hmm.
He played. What did he play? I'm trying to find. I just know he played
Big Nose Thug as well.
Yeah. He did. It's just such a random role. I thought, like, it's like that guy is in this fucking film, but.
We got Hellboy in this movie too.
Yeah.
Ron Perlman. I was gonna mention the Ron.
Love Great. Ron Perlman.
And he gets such a minor role, like the menacing villain number one, you know, of the stabbing. Also, I didn't know the names of the brothers was the Stabbington brothers. That's so great. Like,
and
again, it's another
guard too.
And they're called the Stabbington brothers.
So good.
Let's talk about Mother Gothel. So I think one of the things that really makes this movie work is that the mother is obviously like an extreme version of I don't want my child to run away. So I'm going to make sure that the child like thinks it's horrible. Or that she makes Rapunzel feel like she's stupid all the time and then tells her how bad the world is out there and like just has her little finger around Rapunzel and is, like, very powerful in how manipulative she is, which is always great for... It's always great to have a villain that isn't just, like, brawn, right? Yes. And that, like, would lose in a straight fight, but is, like, manipulating things behind the scenes to make sure things go away. I think it's a very strong villain with a very strong villain song. And while it is cartoonish, it is like, a relatable thing that some adults actually do. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It just resonates more to me than like I want to take over the world because it's like not really that relatable. It's more grounded and down to earth than that.
I completely agree. Like again, I could go on forever about fucking Gothel. She's such a like. There's a lot of scenes in this movie because like kind of my story with the film is like I went to see this with my mom, but my mom was forcing me to go see it. I was like, oh, God, because I had not had a lot of success with Disney movies. My mom is notorious for picking like bad movies to take the family to see. But I saw this with her and immediately like on the first couple scenes with Gothel and Rapunzel, I was like, okay, what's happening here? This feels different. Speaking to your point, it felt very deep. I mean, because obviously like Rapunzel was addressed as a villain, you know, she stole away a child from the parents. That's not a good thing to happen. But through the first couple scenes with Gothel, it's not immediately obvious through her interactions with Rapunzel that she's a inherently evil, terrible, abusive person. They handle it very subtly with the manipulation and then the kind of the gaslighting and the putting down and things like that. You know what I mean? But you could almost see it like you could almost see her as a maybe she's not so bad. You know, she's just doing she just wants to live and she's got Rapunzel here in this tower and things are okay. Right. But in your brain, the back of your mind, you know, that's not true. OK, but it's done so well for when she later on in the film escalates her character when it's either a choice between letting Rapunzel go free or her, you know, just accepting her own mortality. And she completely escalates the conflict. She like solely escalates the conflict, like because she's the main villain antagonist. And I love how you said she's not like trying to take over the kingdom either. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. She's not like, there was never, I thought I was expecting her to be like, and then I will kill the, there was no, I'm going to kill your parents. I'm going to take over the castle. It was literally, she was like, I want to live my libertarian golden hair girl immortality fantasy in the castle hidden away, but for very obviously horrible, selfish reasons.
She's like literally living vicariously through Rapunzel.
That's a good way to put it.
Stealing her, or like gaining her youth back through the magic of Rapunzel's hair and everything. Yeah.
Yes.
It's awesome.
What did you think of, like, when you were watching it? Was there any scenes that, like, stood out to you other than just the visuals or anything like that?
Man, I loved the scene when they finally get to the castle or like the town, whatever it is, and they're playing like jump rope with her hair, and then they like braid it up and it looks like beautiful. But mainly not just for how beautiful her hair looks then, but I'm like, God, thank God she's not dragging her fucking hair all over the ground.
The dirty street.
Disgusting. Yeah, the streets and through the tunnel and everything.
Dude, can we talk about from a technical perspective how awesome the hair tech is in this movie?
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine what it took to animate.
Yeah, it's just
fluid.
Yeah, it is. You know, I once saw that, well, you know, so another thing I think we could talk about with this movie in a broader way is this movie signaled the beginning of Disney Animation Studios adopting CG as its primary art style as opposed to traditional hand-drawn animation. I mean, The Princess and the Frog was the last traditional animated Disney movie we ever got, which I think is a shame. And I sort of think that they should have a different marketing term for like, hey, this is a Disney. I think the Disney Animation Studios should mean hand animated, like drawn. And I think that they should have another marketing term for like, hey, this is the CG studio, because I think they have such a strong history and obviously a legacy of those hand drawn movies that I would like to see them continue that legacy and not have. It's like there's a Ghibli movie from a few years ago that's all CG and it looks fucking horrible. Oh, yeah. It's like take the Ghibli name off of that thing and let it be under some. It's like when Gibson owns Epiphone, but Epiphone guitars aren't very good, so they don't call them Gibson, right? Because they're made in like the Far East. It's like, don't put the big name on the minor projects. Anyway, I think we could talk about how this was the first of their CG stuff. And something I read about how this works at Pixar a long time ago is they use a movie that they're currently making. They incorporate a technology into the development of like the movie so that when they need that technology for future movies, they don't have to go all invent it at once. Like in Finding Nemo, they perfected like the water tech for like CG, and then every movie after that had water in it used the Finding Nemo water tech. Just like I'm sure Frozen uses all the hair tech from.
We're gonna need our best hair guys on this,
right? So Jared, they like get over here. So that they don't have to spend a ton of development time like making the hair and the water and the horse and like all this stuff. They do a little bit every movie and then they bring it all forward. Which is like a really smart way of
was Tangled, like
future-proofing.
Sam, yeah. Was Tangled made post the Pixar acquisition by Disney?
That is a great question. You guys keep talking, I'll figure it out.
Because like something speaking about the context of the film, because I actually think it's an interesting point you bring up. I'm curious.
Yes, you guys 4 years. 4 years after the acquisition.
Yes. So I remember this in my own internal timeline. I remember after the acquisition, because I think WALL-E was like the last non-Disney related Pixar film where Pixar just made the film. That I'm not too sure about, but I think so. That or Ratatouille. Entangled was the first sort of movie that I think entered into the foray where it was like kind of Pixar animated, but it was a Disney film. And there was not a lot of the thing that was strange about Tangled that I distinctly remember. And I did research this. There wasn't a ton of advertising for it. It was not billed as like the next big Pixar film, because like Pixar, even within the larger corporation of Disney as a company, their movies are usually seen with like a, they're obviously funny, they're meant for children, they're timeless, but they're also kind of injected with a very dramatic, like serious flair to them. Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, like Toy Story, Ratatouille, like WALL-E, there's lots of heavy themes throughout these movies, like Finding Nemo. You know, it's not all just comedy and interesting animation. But Tangled, from like I looked up some of the trailers, and I remember this before seeing the film, it was not marketed that way. It was, the comedy was part of the marketing, very heavily emphasized, and there was no, there was none of that, like, I guess that Pixar element of like adding this overly dramatic flair to mm-hmm. your point, Sam. Like in the movie, it's kind of represented like that. Like Gothel, going back to Gothel, the character, her goal isn't to conquer the world, right? It's very small scale, both in like the characters traveling and the context.
Yeah, I think this is something like we go back to on the podcast over and over again. Like sometimes a villain's ambition is so gargantuan that it's almost hard to relate to. And the best villains are the ones that are just dickheads, like Biff from Back to the Future. It's like, is just a dick. Like yeah. he could, that guy could be at any high school in America, not just Hill Valley, Hidden Valley. That's the ranch. Was it Hill Valley? In anyway.
I think it was Hill Valley. Or it was Hill Valley.
So okay, are there things we don't like about Tangled? Lest Xander jumped on your throat. What?
You didn't hear, but that's me typing, leaving the call, and I'm typing a long, furious comment.
Honestly, there are movies that I like more than Tangled on a personal note, but I can't really find that much fault with Tangled. Just like, I just had a great time, and I can't really think like there were jokes that don't hit for me, but I'm also not eight, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not really the target audience. I just had a great time, and it's, like, if my kids were obsessed with the movie Tangled, there's a hell of a lot worse movies that they could watch 500 times. You know what I mean? Like, I had a fun enough time, and I like the songs, and it's a beautiful movie to look at. Mm-hmm. Aside from Xander having a crush on Rapunzel. How about you, Gideon?
I don't think I like super personally resonate with this film. But yeah, I don't really have any major gripes, or I don't really think it drags. I don't really think it does anything bad. There's not really a lot of characters I have any major problems with. It's just, it shows a lot of restraint. It's so well crafted. It's just a very nice, lighthearted, fun fantasy, romance movie. So I don't know. I can't really think of anything personally that I can really knock it for.
I'm curious for your opinion on this, Gideon and Sam. Did you think that the ending, I think the ending is great, but did you think the ending kind of didn't hit that beat in terms of like what the conflict was setting up? Because you had a lot of setup for the Stabbington brothers, and then they were kind of defeated literally off screen by Gothel. And there was no dramatic fight scene with like Gothel, Tangled Flynn and everyone in like the courthouse with the parents looking on. Do you think that was needed potentially in a film like this? What do you guys think?
I think that I'm really glad, like a lot of kids movies, to avoid a violent conflict toward the end, they'll do this thing where like two characters won't talk to each other, and literally the whole movie would be resolved if those two people would just have a conversation. They're like, somebody's like, hey, I need to tell you something. They're like, no, I hate you right now, I'm gonna run away. And then they run away and they just can't resolve it. It's like one of the most frustrating movie tropes ever. They did a good job of working around that, I felt, by like tying Flynn up on the boat and having him like steer off, and like they set Gothel up as so intelligent and manipulative in the way that she set like Rapunzel up for disappointment, you know. Like I don't know, I just like, I thought they did a really good job of keeping it grounded and keeping everybody's intentions pure, and I was not I think the ending of this movie was totally good, and I think it, the reason I like it is it comes back to the reason I like the whole movie, is that the characters all have very clear motivations and they act upon those motivations in ways that make sense. And the plot and the screenplay is all very tight around those things. Like every character always acts according to their own desires, and it makes everything really easy to follow. It doesn't have to have this big convoluted plot, because you care about Rapunzel getting out and being free, and you care about Flynn not having a price on his head.
Also think it's more interesting, the conflict and the resolution is like, is Rapunzel going to get out of this entrapment by Gothel, like this psychological like box that she's put her in? And that would sort of defeat, I agree, Sam, like the setup and the, for all the character that Gothel is. Like if she suddenly like pulls out like a rapier and is like dueling Flynn on a balcony, like in the castle walls, that would have honestly, it could have been fun. Yeah. But like it also, maybe the Stabbington brothers were like doing something and attacking someone else and the horse was fighting them. That could have been a thing. But again, it's like, what is the, why is Gothel like doing this? Her whole character is manipulating Rapunzel. That's what's so, that's what makes it so engaging. It's like she, Rapunzel goes with her willingly back to the tower as a result of Gothel's manipulation, right? It wasn't a result. She didn't get like captured and tied up and brought back by force already. So that was another great, like, again, subtle little thing where Rapunzel's sitting there and Gothel's like, it's like it never even happened. We'll go back to normal, right? Because she wants things to go back to normal. Right. And Rapunzel does have a choice to like accept that, you know, obviously our hero isn't going to do that and has the realization. If I could critique the movie in any way at all, that scene where she discovers that she's the princess, right? I'm not saying it's bad, but I almost would have rather wished that she, even without figuring that out, had just decided to leave. I think that was almost like part of Rapunzel's character. I don't think she needed to know. It works. Like, this is a super nitpick because like the movie set all this up. She's the lost princess. She's going to go back to the kingdom. And it also illustrates how, what Gothel took from her. Right. But that's like my only little small thing. And one other thing too, about the reason I talked about like asking you guys, like, why do we need, why shouldn't there be a big epic action scene? There already was. It was like in the middle of the film. So if they had done another one at the end, it would have felt a little bloated, I feel, even if it was like well done and humorous.
Yeah. So we are coming up on, let me check our time here. We're about 45 minutes. So let's start pulling a wrap up. Is it safe to say, do we have any major topics of discussion that we want to hit before we give out stars?
I want to talk. Oh, sorry. You go ahead, Gideon. Yeah.
Oh, you're good. Quick thing about the ending, and I had a couple things I wanted to mention about Gothel. And you were talking about, you know, the kind of a big climactic ending. I do like that it gets a bit dark near the end, where she stabs Flynn, and then, you know, she's basically defeated when the hair is cut, and she literally, like, turns to dust, is, like, cremated, crawling out. That was really cool.
I thought it was smart how they handled her falling. Like, she didn't, like, you know, splat against the ground. She like Obi-Wan Kenobi'd in midair and just disappeared into her robe. I was like, okay, smart way of handling that. Anyway,
And they would never do this, but when she's saying like, oh, I'm the hidden princess, and she's like, oh, I hate when you mumble. Like, what did you say? And she says it like louder. I'm like, you know, like sometimes movies, they get that one swear. She should have been like, I'm the hidden princess, bitch. You know, I wanted that.
you wanted something like, I want the extra, actually. I agree. I like what you said. Like, that's another, you vocalized something I was thinking about, that scene where Rapunzel was showing, I guess, she was becoming empowered and restrained. But in that moment, I think it may have worked better if she was like more furious, you know, which kind of comes later when, you know, like she said, you'll never use my hair again, and that kind of thing. So it does work. The only thing I wanted to talk about, that I do feel this is important. We're going to talk about my favorite scene in the movie, okay? I'm going to sit here, burn the candles. It has to be done. I wrote this down. And that is, one of my favorite fucking sequences in the whole film is when Flynn climbs the tower and meets Rapunzel for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even vocalize, and I'm interested to hear what you guys have to think about. I can't vocalize why I love this sequence so much, because at this point in the film, as I was watching it for the first time, I remember distinctly, I'm thinking, yeah, this is okay. You know, this is cool. Little, you know, characters are making me laugh or whatever, but it's probably still standard. But the where the rubber meets the road is Flynn and Rapunzel. If this meeting doesn't work, if the dialogue is weird, if their interaction is weird, the whole pretense of the film is going to fall apart. And I've had this happen to me with a lot of Disney films where I'm like, as soon as that moment happens of conflict and of adventure, it's a lot of the times they seem to drop the ball. And her interaction with Flynn is so funny, humorous. It shows a ton, she's like hiding and scared. I'm like, I love that. That's exactly what she would be doing. You know what I mean? She doesn't she's like doing, I don't know, something about that I like. Flynn's scary. And then she sneaks up from behind him, hits him, and she yelps like a girl, and he falls. I love that too. There was no she didn't glower over him. They weren't trying to force her character to be tough or anything like that. You know what I mean? Because they were even showing her kind of being goofy and spinning the pan and hitting herself on the head, mm-hmm. which it kind of plays into just building her as this solid character. Mm-hmm. And then also when Flynn wakes up, and she's still hiding up in the rafters or whatever, and you know she's interrogating him. It also shows Flynn's his attempts to manipulate her, you know, and but also his smarts. My favorite line in the film is you will never find the crown. And then he looks around. It's it's in that vase, isn't it? And she knocks him out again. It's just because it's so good. Flynn doesn't become an idiot. Flynn doesn't immediately fall in love with her and try to who's, you know what I mean? There's none of that. Mm-hmm. He's more just because again, it's like you said, Sam, Gideon, you mentioned this too. The character's motivations are established and consistent. Rapunzel doesn't just fall in love with Flynn. Ooh, this man. She's mm-hmm. curious about him, and same with her. But it's not they immediately fall over each other, and neither becomes a really poorly written trope. Rapunzel doesn't become a Mary Sue, or she's suddenly super powerful, could do all these things, and Flynn doesn't become a Stew, where he could just completely trick her or whatever he needs to do. And then the next sequence, I still kind of consider this the same scene, is when she leaves the tower, and in the aftermath, where they don't immediately go on their adventure. And this is, again, I wasn't expecting this. You see the aftermath of her leaving the tower, being psychologically torturing herself. You know, coming to grips with all the Gothel gaslighting in her life. She's like, I'm a terrible person. And she goes from that. She has these euphoric highs and these depressive mm-hmm. lows, kind of what a psychologically torn person would be. And to finish my long-winded thesis,
you're good.
It's it's funny, it's great, and it also is speaking to those kind of psychological depths that the movie is showing. But there's never a scene where. I guess there's one time where Finn kind of does mention it, but it's just funny and it works and it kind of speaks to Flynn's character. He's like, I get my crown. You get to go back to your mother with a relationship based on trust and foundations of love. We both win, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact line, but yes, I had to talk about that because that's when I fell in love with the film.
It is very funny. They have great chemistry, the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because they veer slightly from the tropes, they're more modern takes on the handsome prince and the princess. I think they do a good job of that without being overly, we're not doing the old Disney princess thing. Sometimes that can be a little obnoxious. When writers do that. I think they write the line really well in this movie between being a traditional movie and being a little bit a traditional Disney princess movie and being a little bit more updated for modern audiences. Without going over the top into annoying territory, they ride that perfectly. And I think when Flynn and Rapunzel first meet, I almost said when Flynn and Tangled first meet.
Yeah,
they do a good job of that.
Would you say great name for the film, Tangled?
I don't know. It was originally Rapunzel, and they changed it.
Yeah, great choice. Great choice.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. So.
I had
getting to
two quick things I wanted to mention before we get to the stars. Also, just a quick note, when they have their meeting, Flynn and Rapunzel, maybe one of the best lines for me in the whole film, when he's like, "Hey, I just want to get out of your hair," and he's like tied up by her hair. I was like, that is amazing.
That's great. Yeah.
And then very clever. To talk about Gothel, one last thing. You know, she, even though she is being very manipulative and giving these like backhanded compliments and like telling her how scary the world is, that tavern scene like showcases it in an awesome way. But it does such a cool job of doing an inverse, where it's like the first man she ever meets is Flynn, who's very charming and conventionally attractive and all these things. But he's kind of like a conniving fucker in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then the scary guys with like the hook hand and everything, you know, it looks like they're going to like attack her or something. And she's all freaking out. And then they like, "I want to be this great pianist." And yeah, I want to, you know, it's so fun. And they don't waste those characters, and they come back later. Right. And it's like this, like the movie has such great restraint and it's so resourceful.
That is such a good point, man. That's so interesting. You mentioned that, because I couldn't vocalize that, but I was you're absolutely right. Like, the only people who do not want anything from Rapunzel are those characters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they want nothing from her. They don't want her hair. They don't want her money. They don't want, like, you know, like even Flynn at that point is like, "I need to get this girl to here so I can get my thing back." Like, it's actually quite brilliant, and it's a complete juxtaposition to what Gothel's been telling her, you know, like scary men with pointy teeth.
But you know, it's funny you say that, because I didn't think about it until right now, Kenny, but you're right. The movie does use every part of the buffalo, as it were, and it doesn't waste any of the characters, and they all serve like multiple purposes throughout the movie. So it is very economical in that way. I'm going to give one more shout out to Maximus the horse, who has like 10 out of 10 physical comedy humor throughout the movie. He's just so well animated.
We didn't even mention the scene where Flynn's fighting with the pan, and Flynn goes, I want you to know, this is the strangest thing I've ever done. Yeah. I don't think I've laughed harder at that line when I was watching this with my mom. Like, I busted out laughing. It was so funny.
So good. Yeah,
I'm sure your mom had a great time taking you to go see this movie.
She like, oddly enough, she likes the movie, but she's not like in love with it like I am.
You know, what movie my mom surprisingly really liked when I showed it to her and did not think she was gonna like it? Mad Max Fury Road.
Damn.
Oh, like, wait, that's the new one? That's awesome.
My mom was thinking about getting a bumper sticker on her Honda Civic that says, "My other car is a war rig."
Dude, that's so awesome. Wow, your mom's like based and red pilled for that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, she has very interesting she has good, I think, good taste in movies. Like, she loves the movie Fargo a lot. Like, when I showed her Fargo, she loved it. I think she has, like, she likes The Fly, which is like a David Cronenberg movie from the 80s that's like body horror to the extreme. I mean, like, my mom likes some cool movies. My dad likes the movie Rocky, and that's about it. So
it's funny. It's like you just described yourself, Sam, like perfectly. You like the weird Cronenberg, like heavy metal stuff, and at the same time, you kind of yearn for the classical Americana hero Rocky. You know, like, it's both in there. You are
there's the same coin. Yes, there's like Walt Whitman says, "I contain multitudes." Okay, do we want to get to ratings?
Sure.
I'm going to go ahead and give this movie a straight 4. And I think if we were still doing points, I would say like 4.5, but I'm going to stick with a 4. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's like Neil always says, you got to leave room for the 5s. You know, you got to leave room for those movies that just really hit you on a personal level. And it's like, this movie doesn't hit me on a personal level because it's not for me. But you know, that's just how it is. So, you got to leave room for the Frost Nixons and for the Seven Samurai and the things like this. How about you, Gideon?
Yeah, for me, watching it, I was kind of fluctuating between a 3 and a 4 the whole time, just because it's not like super personally resonating with me. But as it went on and the more I thought about it, it definitely got bumped up to a 4. It's just really solid. There's not really much I can complain about. It's very rewatchable. It's just really nice. It's just a nice, lighthearted, fantasy, fun film. Yeah.
Yeah. And Xander, I can assume that you're going to give it a five, but I don't want to assume.
I am going to give it a five. These are one of my films that did, it really resonates with me. And I can't even say for like any deep psychological or personal reason, but for me, in my opinion, it is a perfect film. I understand the four. I don't have anything. I think that's very appropriate, right? But for me, if I were to try to untangle Tangled, I would just be, for me personally, be nitpicking. I think you would have to give this movie like a four, like you guys are in the position of doing. It's something that just didn't, like, it doesn't hit all the beats. There's always room for it to be better. But every decision they made, from, again, just dialogue, characters, story beats, like the action, music, and just being economic with the film, all hit for me. I think that's another reason why I can rewatch it. Like, I can, there's a lot of movies I like, but I don't, like I said, I don't rewatch them a lot. This movie, I almost watch it like once a year sometimes. It's very, very enjoyable. So I would give it a five.
Nice.
See, I think I agree with you. Like, if I was like trying to be an objective movie watcher, and like review it as like, I don't know if there's an exact quote, but the way Roger Ebert describes it, now that I'm comparing myself or our podcast to Roger Ebert, but the way he describes it is like, you're supposed to evaluate it based on what it is trying to be as an objective reviewer. And I think Tangled is a 5 out of 5 star movie if you are evaluating it as it is trying. It is 5 out of 5 at doing what it is trying to do. It's flawless in its execution of like what it is trying to be. It's just what that thing is does not resonate with Sam super personally. So that is where it's a 4 instead of a 5.
I think that makes a lot of sense. It makes a ton of sense.
The Venn diagram has to be overlapping for the 5-star. Like, it has to be targeted toward me and be super well executed. So
there are people that another movie that's very comparable to Tangled is There Will Be Blood. Films draw very different views, and some people are like, I hate There Will Be Blood. It's a perfect film. Yeah. You know what I mean? There are people like that. It's like, yeah, I fucking hate that movie. Ooh. 10 out of 10. Nothing wrong with it. Yeah. And Tangled is a very opposite polar extreme. You guys obviously didn't have that kind of reaction to it, but I think that's well said, Sam. I would say for me, hits on the emotional level, a 5. And then I just think, like I said, if I was just reviewing this movie like a robot, I genuinely believe it is just a 5. I can't be like, well, then there was that scene. And
no, it's great. It's,
I just, I can't think great. Of one.
Mm-hmm. You're right. It's great. Mm-hmm. So we will be back in another couple of weeks to do Bo is Afraid. Finally, I mean, we've been talking about doing it for weeks and weeks, and things keep happening, but everybody's had a busy summer. So we'll get back in the swing of things with Ari Aster's Bo is Afraid. I'm excited to watch it. I'm a little bit scared.
The tonal whiplash is going to be insane from Tangled to Bo is Afraid.
Listen, we do... Grace suggested we just turn into a Disney princess theme podcast.
If you guys want to do a real tonal whiplash and stay in the theme of animated, let's watch Plague Dogs.
I've been thinking about putting that on, but I know it's super depressing. That's all I know about it, really.
It's a hard one, man. It's like if old Yeller was like dopped in a toxic waste pit and left there to. I mean, it's like, it's not bad.
Or we could watch Watership Down.
I want to watch that too.
I would watch this shit.
I would too. That movie scares me even to this day. I don't know. It's very disturbing. Like, as a kid, it had a very disturbing imagery. But I digress.
All right, Xander, what are you doing with the rest of your night, man?
I actually have a pizza that I got here an hour ago, and I've been so enraptured by our conversation, I forgot about it. So I'm going to heat that up, eat, and then hit the hay, get ready for tomorrow.
Yeah, awesome.
Hell yeah, nice.
What about you, Gid? Gonna go back and hit that fire giant a couple more times.
Either that, or grind out the Ratchet and Clank platinum. Maybe watch some more of the truck.
I'm gonna give you a hint. The sheep gun in Ratchet and Clank 2016 is extremely overpowered once you level it up.
Okay.
It takes forever to level up. It's like Magikarp, right? It takes forever to level up, and it's a pain in the ass. But once you do it, it's by far the strongest weapon in the game.
Hell yeah! I can't wait.
You know what? I'm just going to go watch Tangled again tonight, boys.
There you go.
Good. Do it, man.
Hell yeah.
Okay. And tonight, I think I am currently halfway through my impossible run for Dead Space. And that is the only thing separating me from the platinum trophy. I got the one gun run done a couple days ago, so just got to finish it on impossible, and I'm pretty much home free. So I'll be glad to have that one out of the way. And I'm also doing the continuous speed run on Uncharted 1. Mm-hmm. You have to beat it in under 2.5 hours, and currently I'm at like 25 minutes, and I'm 20% through the game. So I think I'm gonna I think I'm gonna make it if I don't die too many times, but we'll see.
Sam, do you ever do retrospectives on video games for this podcast?
You know, we have actually talked, Xander, about doing one for the game Pentiment, which I think you would be really interested in if you got in on. But we've all been busy, and it's just been hard to. I keep forgetting to like try to organize people to sit down and do Pentiment, but I think it would be really fun to do that. So if you enjoyed yourself tonight, Xander, please consider getting Pentiment.
Sure.
And so it's not a very long game; it's about 10 hours long, but it's split up into 3 equal parts. Okay, so what we were thinking about doing was maybe doing like 3 podcasts and doing the first third, the second third, the final third, and talking about everybody's choice, because it's like a choose your own adventure kind of deal. And talking about everybody's experience with the game. Does that sound appealing to you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I like I like talking about games. I think there's some fun to them.
So, maybe we'll do that in the future if I can get a bunch of... Because Gideon and Alex Princeton and Paul and I have all finished the first third of the game, but have not progressed past that. So, if you wanted to get on that, we would love to have you. So,
That'd be great.
We'll see everybody in 2 weeks, and... good night and good luck.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me on, guys, and letting me gush about one of my favorite films.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. That's what we're here for, man. Come on anytime.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yep. See ya. Bye.
Later, boys.
Night.